With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome in. It's the Andrew Porter Show here, 8 p.m. Kevin Keenan behind the glass. You can read me at the all-new 94WIP.com. You can tweet me throughout the show and throughout the week whenever you want at AND_Porter. 888-729-9494 gets you through. It was a wild Phillies game, the U.S. Open, with some World Cup today. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Big show coming up, 2-hour show, 8:30. Derek Bodner going to talk Sixers, 9 o'clock. Elon Vinokurov, the president of EV Hoops and Scout U, little NBA draft talk, 9:20. I'm going to have a physician's assistant on to talk about Michael Porter Jr.'s injury. And obviously that means I'm going to get a lot into the NBA draft. The Sixers, the Kawhi stuff. I think the NBA offseason is about to shift into fire emoji mode. It's going to be big here coming up, especially here in Philadelphia. I mean, if you look at the NBA offseason, if you want to rank like the top five teams that are most viable here this summer, the Sixers are on that list. The Sixers are one of the most interesting teams this summer. A lot of eyes around the league are on the Sixers. So it should be interesting. Phillies are on the docket as well. We'll get into them. Big win today. They're 37-32. But I want to start with this. In the NBA draft and the Sixers and that stuff. Defined roles. Defined roles are very important. When you look at the top companies in the world, really, you look at defined roles. You look at Amazon. You look at Netflix. You look at Google. You look at Facebook. You look at the Golden State Warriors and New England Patriots. The thing that those franchises have in common, those companies have in common, if you will, one of those, the key ingredients is defined roles, meaning that they know exactly, their employees know exactly what they should be doing from the top down, from the CEO to the water boy. You know, those people inside of the best companies in the world know exactly what they should be doing. When you don't have these defined roles, and you're a company on the whim, you can afford to take more home run hacks in the draft. You can take high upside plays. You can afford to bust, because if they bust, you just stink still and you just start over. The Mavericks, the Hawks, for example, they can do whatever they want because they have got nothing to lose. When you have defined roles, it also makes it easier to know what you're looking for. And for the first time in a really long time, the Sixers have defined roles, and that's important. And that's point number one as we head into the NBA draft and look at the Sixers. They have Brett Brown. Brett Brown runs the show. He's now the GM/president/coach/whatever you want. He's the czar. He makes the decisions. He's the smartest basketball mind in the organization, damn near the league, if you ask me. But he runs the show. Brett Brown makes decisions. It's his system. It's built on pace, space, and defense, and that's what Brett Brown does. It all starts with Brett Brown. That's number one. Joel Embiid, he's the star versatile center who controls the team on the defensive end. Ben Simmons is the star versatile point guard who controls the team on the offensive end. Dario Saric, he's the Swiss Army knife, a legit NBA starter, a potential future all-star. Robert Covington's your 3-and-D guy. J.J. Redick, if back, is instant offense, one of the league's best, most lethal shooters. T.J. McConnell, your rock, your backup point guard. Markel Fultz is the one guy who's undefined yet. He's the young upside guy we don't know about. But for the most part, those roles are defined. They are what they are. The Sixers know exactly what they need. In 2014, they went into the draft, Sam Hinkie, and he talked about this on a podcast recently, Invest Like the Best, and he said his most proudest moment as a Sixers GM was Joel Embiid and Dario Saric. Why? Those were home run draft picks. Those were high upside plays. Those were swings for the fences. Joel Embiid was a home run. Dario Saric was a standing triple. Those were gambles that paid off. Not all of them pay off. Brett Brown was asked what the Sixers are looking for, and he said, quote, somebody who can play in June. So that brings me to this point. The Sixers have defined roles. They need a guy who can help them right away. They need a single up the middle. No more home runs. No more risk. It's time to play risk-averse draft style. It's time to get a guy who's older, who's mature, who's high IQ, who's smart, who's intelligent, who's willing to work, who knows exactly what he needs to do to fit this team, who's willing to be a non-star player because he's coming to an organization with two guys that are the clear pillars of the organization and future top five NBA players. You need a guy to fit that mold. You need that player, and that player is Mikal Bridges. And Mikal Bridges knows he's that player. Listen to Mikal Bridges explain what he will do when the Sixers draft him at number 10.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, coming from the Spurs, how they play, man. They like to play tough and defense, you know, defense first. And, you know, that's how I play. And also, I mean, you got Ben and Joel, just them two. And I feel like as a person like me can correlate them, just, you know, when Ben goes to ball screens or transition, that I'm that guy, you know, you can find a corner or that's going to cut to the basket. You know, just move out the ball well for him. And same with Embiid, just create space for him.
That's Mikal Bridges. That's a 21-year-old kid who's going to turn 22, knowing exactly what he needs to do for the Sixers. He's not talking about scoring and dunking and shooting. He's talking about pick and roll, transition spacing, cutting to the basket, playing off of Joel and Ben. The first thing he mentioned was defense. Name me another prospect that's going to mention defense first. He knows exactly what the team needs. Like, that's how high IQ this guy is. There are four things about Mikal Bridges on why he's better suited for the Sixers than some of these other guys. You know, Kevin Knox, he turns 19 in August. Miles Bridges, he's 20. All those guys are 7-foot wingspan. They're wing players, 6'7". Mikal's the best shooter of the three. He's the oldest of the three. But most importantly about Mikal and about these draft picks, and 888-729-9494 if you want to get in about these draft picks, it's really hard to evaluate draft picks from the outside, let alone the inside, but from the outside in particular, because we don't know about the character of these guys. That's the thing that you have to divulge and get into, is their minds. I mean, that's really what's important, is who these people are. You're drafting people, not spreadsheets. You know, you got to figure out, is this guy smart enough? Is this guy good enough? Is this guy been through enough? And Mikal Bridges, there's a lot of reasons why I love Mikal Bridges. Not only does he turn 22 on August 30th, he's 6'7", he's long, he averaged 17 and 5. He shot 43% from three last year. He was a 90% foul shooter his second year at Nova. But most importantly, there are other things about him that stick out. You listen to him talk. You listen to him explain his role and what he wants it to be. Mikal Bridges has been through conflict already. He's a 22-year-old kid who's been through conflict. He came into college. He was the 82nd ranked player on ESPNU. He was skinny. He was small. He had to redshirt as a freshman at Villanova. Jay Wright said, "You're not playing." I mean, that doesn't happen to a Kevin Knox or a Miles Bridges. Those guys are all McDonald's All-Americans. Mikal Bridges has been through struggle. He worked his butt off to get to this point. He wasn't a McDonald's All-American. He wasn't told his whole life, "You're going to be great. You're going to the NBA. He wasn't sure he was going to the NBA. So many players that have success in the NBA are molded that way. They hit a growth spurt in high school, and all of a sudden they get good, and they're like, whoa, you know, CJ McCollum and Donovan Mitchell, and I think Damian Lillard, and you can go on. There's a lot of guys that are molded that way, like Mikal Bridges, who have been through a lot, who have worked hard to get to this point and don't need to be a superstar in the NBA. They haven't been on the track for superstardom. He's okay with working hard, putting the time in. and doing what the team asks him in order to win games. He's a two-time NCAA champion. Two-time. In three seasons, he won two championships. And it doesn't really matter because I've made the argument for Ben Simmons, his team stunk, and Markel Fultz, his team stunk, and I love those guys as prospects. But Mikel's not a superstar athlete. He's a learner. He's a basketball player, and he has two championships. He's played in high-pressure situations, something the Sixers extremely lack. He's going to be older. He's a year older and 2 years older than Markel Fultz, and a year older than Ben Simmons and 2 years older than Markel Fultz. Think about that. His first year, he'll be 2 years older than Markel Fultz. And most importantly, he fills a need. He's an athletic wing who can defend and make threes. He's a more well-rounded, younger, better Robert Covington. I mean, that's really what he is. Is he great off the dribble? No. Is he an explosive, going to blow by you one-on-one? No. Is he a perennial all-star? No. But that's okay. He has a really safe floor. He's going to contribute in the NBA, and he's going to be a really good NBA player for multiple seasons. I mean, I don't see him. His bust potential is extremely low because of how smart and how hard he works. That's the other thing, is his character. You know, such a high IQ guy. His mom forced him to work hard his entire life. He learned from Jay Wright as a player. He's been a part of a winning program. I mean, he's exactly the molded player the Sixers need. 888-729-9494. Now, will he be there at 10? That's another question. And the other guys that the Sixers will have to choose from, we'll get into. Miles Bridges, Kevin Knox, and, you know, Michael Porter Jr., if he falls down in his injury, it's all on the table. It's interesting when you have the 10th pick. Sixers also have picks 26, 38, 39, 56, and 60. So they have six total picks. There's going to be a lot of finagling going on. They don't have a GM. The Kawhi rumors come into play. There's a lot going on. We're going to talk about it throughout the show. Derek Bodner at 8:30, Elon Vinokurov at 9, Michael Porter Jr. talk at 9:20. A lot of stuff going on. Let's kick it off with Sean in Virginia. You're on WIP. What's up, Sean?
Hey, what's going on, Rocha?
What's up, man?
I can't complain, man. I'm excited week coming up here.
Isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. But I've probably listened to way too many podcasts and read way too many scouting reports because I'm so conflicted on what the Sixers should do. I've heard your compelling argument on Mikel Bridges, and ever since the end of the season came by, you know, that was my first thought. Like, Bridges would be a good fit. The only way, in my opinion, he's a good fit on this team is if Covington isn't there. Because, yes, he's a younger, probably more well-rounded version of Robert Covington, but the fact that Robert Covington is battle-tested, and he was, even though I don't agree with it, he was a first-team all-defensive player, he's probably going to get the bulk of the minutes. And you can't play both of them together because, as we saw in the playoffs, when Ben and JoJo don't have someone on the wings who can create their own shot, the team tends to get a little stifled.
Yeah, so, but if I told you can get Covington, who's 3 years younger, probably a more well-rounded player and a lot cheaper, now Covington becomes a tradable asset. And I don't know what they do with him, but you could always, you know, I don't know, year one maybe, but down the line, Covington maybe next year or at the deadline becomes a tradable piece with a relatively decent contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree with that because I think it does become expendable if you get Bridges. But that also brings me to my point to where I think Covington could be salvageable if we were still to throw some assets into the draft and possibly move up, as we saw there's a rumor above it. And this, obviously there's two guys that I'm looking at. The first one was Michael Porter Jr., which scares the living daylights out of me because of his injury.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that, yeah.
And I can't wait to listen to the doctor later because I just want to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But the other one's Luka Doncic. I was on Twitter today, and I had some back and forth with people about my opinion about him. I don't think he's going to be a star in this league, but I think, like you were saying, he fits a role. I think he fits a role really well. He's got length. He's big. He's got good vision.
It's tough to me. Like, isn't he a little bit redundant with Ben? Like, does he play off the ball, I guess?
I think he can play more off the ball. I think he's a spot-up shooter. I think in their pace and space type of offense, he's the one that when you're throwing the ball up the court, he can drive it to the basket. He can make moves off the dribble. Things that Covington couldn't do, things that JJ really couldn't do. He's a little bit more creative on the wing. He's what folks should have been, just not as athletic.
Right.
And then if you add those two folks and Doncic together, with, you know, with Ben and JoJo, you spread the court a lot better. You got better shooting. And it's a kid that I think that I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar. He's not an all-pro in this league because I don't think he has the athletic profile for it. But I think he's just a really good – I think of him as a taller Manu Ginobili-type player. Maybe not that to the Hall of Fame extent, but just being able to fill so many different roles on that team with all the different skills that he has.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Sean, thanks for the call. And here's my take on Luka Doncic. Like, if you're going to move up into the top five to get a Luka Doncic, you better – he better be a superstar player. He's so risky, and this is such a risky move. I think if you're the Sixers, again, you want to play risk-averse here. I don't want to trade commodities to move up for Luka Doncic, who's arguably redundant with Ben Simmons, who you don't know if he's athletic enough to play in the NBA. He's so hard to project. He's young. He's 19. He doesn't turn 20 till the end of February. He's you don't know if he's athletic enough. He's coming from a Real Madrid. It's so hard to evaluate someone like that. Let someone else gamble. I don't want to gamble with this pick. The Sixers have a point guard for 25 years or however long Ben wants to play. You know, they have a center until he collapses. You know, they have their point guard and their center. They have their pillars of their foundation. Now you just fill in with a billion wings, a billion 6'7", 6'8", guys who can switch everything and shoot. And that's exactly what Mikal Bridges is. He shot 90% from the line. He can shoot threes. He can run. He's long. He's athletic. You're not going to ask him to play ISO ball. Look, you can't give up on Markelle Fultz either. That's another part of the equation here. If you think Markelle Fultz is done, then you're operating differently. I don't think Brett Brown thinks Markelle Fultz is done. I don't think the franchise thinks Markelle Fultz isn't going to be good. And I totally believe in Markelle Fultz. I think he has the capabilities to be that off-ball player along with Ben, to be the Kyrie to the LeBron, if you will, to be the guy to create offense. I still totally believe in Markelle Fultz. That's why Mikal Bridges comes in. He gets a rookie contract for 4 years. He runs the floor. He dunks the ball. He plays defense. He's high IQ. He's smart. He wants to learn. He wants to get better. He makes his foul shots. It's exactly what you need. 888-729-9494. Derek Bonner later. Elon Vinokurov at 9, and then Michael Porter Jr., physician's assistant, at 9:30. Andrew Porter Show, WIP Sports Times, 8:17. It's the Andrew Porter Show, 8:22 on a Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I represent a group of, for those of us who don't have our fathers with us, I lost my father about 3 years ago. He taught me pretty much everything I know today about basketball. I've played my whole life, and he was instrumental in that, put a court in my basement when I was 3, and that was it. I just played pretty much 12 months a year, 5 days a week, and we set out. The goal was for me to play varsity basketball at George Washington High School. I did that for 3 years. Probably shouldn't have capped my ceiling. I always tell him, why'd you cap me, Dad? I could have played D1 or something. But now varsity for 3 years, all public for 1, was pretty good for a 6-foot white kid. So, I mean, I'll take it. And it got me to this point, I think, my love for sports. And look, I think I'm pretty good at evaluating the NBA draft because I have played basketball my whole life. Look, I mean, NFL, I'm not going to lie. Like, well, I'll talk about the NFL draft. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Like, I'm looking at analytics and stuff. Like, you know, nobody knows. The NFL is impossible. I never played football. It's impossible. Baseball, like, I've played baseball, but there's a million players. No one cares about the baseball draft or the hockey draft or whatever. So, like, NBA draft, I have a pretty good handle on. If you guys follow me at @AND_Porter, if you listen to my shows and stuff, I was on Jason Tatum last year. I'm just saying. I really was on Devin Booker a few years ago. I've been pretty good. Andrew Wiggins was my guy in 14. I didn't think, you know, Embiid was, I didn't know what, you know, big men are hard to evaluate, especially injury-prone big men. But I've been relatively decent on my NBA rankings and projections and stuff like that. So I think it's a fun thing, NBA draft. Oh, and by the way, Thursday NBA draft coverage on WIP 6 to 10 will be myself, Joe Giglio, Michael O'Connor of The Athletic. We'll be hanging out covering the NBA draft throughout the night. So tune in 6 to 10 live coverage when the Sixers make their pick. 888-729-9494. Derek Bodner coming up at 8:30. We're talking Sixers and really NBA draft stuff. My guy this year is Mikal Bridges. I think he fits exactly what they need. Zach went to school with Mikal. What's up, Zach?
Hey, what's going on, boss?
What's up, man?
Hey, so, you know, first off, I'm going to start off with, I'm a Celtics fan, so I'm on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a little bit that I'm in total agreement with you in regards to, you know, the offense and defense that the Sixers run. You say, you know, Ben Simmons is a ball-dominant player, right? He's going to need the ball in his hands to do what he does. He's not, necessarily a shooting threat. He's not going to score from the outside, so to say. So you're looking at a guy that needs to be, you know, like a swingman. It doesn't have to have the ball in his hands. And there's a reason why I think Mikal is the perfect fit for the Sixers. Personally, I love him for the Celtics, you know. But, you know, growing up with Mikal, we had a coach, you know, his high school coach was maybe the toughest coach that I've ever, you know, I had him for a year. That didn't last too long, clearly. But, you know, he had to play, he emphasized defense. Mikal, you know, at the, you know, what was it, you know, 20 minutes ago you were saying that yep. Snippet that you had. He emphasizes defense. He does what the team needs to do. He can shoot from the corner. He can do all those things that the Sixers are looking for. I don't think they should look at anybody else but Mikal. You know, you also talked about a guy that needs to come in and do his job now, not someone that's looking to get, you know, get some development, you know, maybe a little development. He is going to be a rookie. But someone that's going to come in, know his role, and contribute to the team now. Because if I'm looking at the Sixers, you know, as a Celtics fan, I was terrified of you guys. You know, it didn't go the way, you know, thank goodness for me, that I thought it was going to go. But you guys had a guy like Mikal Bridges and the way that he's grown up in the system that I got to watch him play, and you guys are going to be golden.
Zach, was he a star in high school, or was he? Did it take him a little bit?
So it's funny you say that because, you know, Mikal was always a good basketball player growing up. You know, my stepbrother played ball with him when they were younger. But when he got to high school, you know, it took him about – He started to play a lot sophomore year. You know, he was really good, but he didn't become a sheer stud until probably towards the end of junior year. And then senior year, you know, that's when he took off.
Right.
I mean, that's when I knew, it was like, you know what, this guy is superior to everybody else. And he got the offer from Nova, and you know, he's a smart kid. He had an offer from Xavier and a couple other schools. He was a top 150 recruit. You know, he was number 97 or something like that, which was a huge accomplishment. But he took the offer from Nova. Like you said, he redshirted it, did what he needed to do. He already graduated, smart kid. And just a little bit about him, too. You know, the other day, I'm not like, you know, a super close friend to him. But, you know, I connect him on social media and whatnot every now and then. And he was doing his rookie photo shoot, right? And, you know, he's dressed up, you know, in a suit and everything, posted to Instagram. And I just messaged him real quick, like, hey, man, looking good. Hope all is well. And I know a couple guys that are D1 that I play with for football and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They won't hit me back at all about anything.
Yep.
You know, just a simple hi. He hits me back. Hey, man, appreciate it. Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
He's a humble kid. He seems like a good kid, right?
Oh, yeah. He's totally humble. You know, he's the type of guy that he's going to come into your organization. And this is what petrifies me as, you know, the opposing team. You know, as a Celtics fan, and he's going to come in, and he's going to give you points. He might not start right away. He might. I don't know. But I feel like he's going to contribute in some way, shape, or form that's going to give a lot of teams a lot of problems.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Zach. I appreciate it. And I don't think he'll start right away, but I think by midseason, he's pushing for that starting spot because he just does things the right way. And that's what I love about him, too, is that he's not a McDonald's All-American. You know, he works so hard to get to this point, and he appreciates where he's been. A lot these McDonald's All-Americans, you know, Miles Bridges, Kevin Knox, for example, these guys want the ball. They want to be ISO players. They want to score 25 a game, and they want to be the alphas on their team. The Sixers don't need that anymore. They're at a point in their process, if you will, where they don't need an alpha. They need a guy who's willing to work, who appreciates where he's come from, where he's been, has been through some conflict, some struggle, and can fill a need, which is a 3-and-D wing who's athletic, smart, high IQ, character, can pretty much do everything you need from him. And he's okay with being a 12 to 16 point per game, 10 seasons in the NBA kind of guy. You know, if his career never ends in an All-Star game or doesn't equal an All-NBA team, Mikal Bridges can sit back and say, that's okay. Whereas Miles Bridges and Kevin Knox, those guys, I mean, Kevin Knox is 19. He's thinking, he's thinking 10 All-Stars and I want to average 25 a game and I want to be on House of Highlights every night. And that's not what the Sixers need. That's just my opinion. 888-729-9494. Derek Bodner of The Athletic joins us now. I want to get Derek's thoughts on all this. What's up, Derek?
Not much. How you doing?
Good. I'm really good. The Sixers are heading into an NBA draft where, you know, they're at the top of pretty much everything when it comes to LeBron and Kawhi and, you know, the draft. They have six picks and the GM search. I mean, the Sixers are one of the biggest stories of the offseason right now. What's your take on this whole offseason? And, like, do they need to make a big splash type of move here? Like, how do you feel about the overarching offseason for the Sixers right now?
Yeah, it's a real interesting question because a lot of it boils down to, you know, throughout the season, I pretty much said if you can't get LeBron, you can't get Kawhi, you can't get Paul George, then save your money, go into next summer and try again. But if Kawhi ends up, let's say he goes somewhere and signs an extension, Klay Thompson signs an extension, then your options dwindle quite a bit. I still think if everything falls through this summer, they're still going to probably try to run it back with one-year deals and try again next summer. But there is certainly a sense of urgency. There are opportunities now that don't come around all that often, and I think they feel that.
Do you think the rumors about Luka Doncic and the Sixers moving up are real, or do you think they stay at 10 ultimately?
You know, I think if you ask me, I think they're probably still going to stay at 10. Would they have interest in moving up? Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they would have interest in moving up. And, I, you know, this is speculation, but Doncic is somebody, I think, who fits them extremely well. I think fits them better than Michael Porter, who is the other common name when you talk about moving up to that range. I do think Doncic would be real interesting on this team.
What do you like about Doncic's game?
I mean, he might walk in and be one of the top 5 to 7 passers in the NBA right from the jump. His real elite skill is his court vision, his ability to see a play develop, to catch a defender off guard and make that correct pass. He steps in there and you would have two of the top, like I said, 5 to 7. In that regard, I think he has real promise as a shooter. Big questions are going to come athletically, but as a 6'8" guy who can run a pick and roll, who can really see the floor very well and who can shoot, I think he's going to provide a lot of value.
If they do stay at 10, who do you like? I guess it's right now it's between Bridges, Knox, and Bridges. I've talked about those three a lot. Who do you like for them at 10 if they stay there?
Yeah, well, I like Mikhail more than Miles by quite a bit. I think he's got a much more defined role. I think he has two real strengths that he can bank on, whereas Miles is a lot more of a do-it-all kind of player. I like Mikhail a lot, too. I do like Lonnie Walker quite a bit as well, and he's a little bit of a gamble. He's a guy who you could look 3 or 4 down the line. He doesn't pan out. But he has so much athletic ability. He has so much size in terms of his wingspan. And I think he's a real underrated defender. And when I look at a guy like Lonnie, who maybe isn't the best decision maker in terms of his, you know, shot selection right now, the reason I give him more of a pass than others of his ilk is because he does get after it defensively, and he has the physical tools to grow into that even more. Those are kind of the three guys, along with Kevin Knox. I do like, you know, I heard you talking about Kevin a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're underselling Kevin a little bit. He came out there, and to start the year, he was a real off-ball player. And I think he filled that role well. I think he filled that role willingly. I think he's probably a little more adaptable offensively than you're giving him credit for. But I do think Mikal Bridges has a big leg up on him defensively so far.
If the Sixers, so Markel Fultz, sorry, if we shift to Markel Fultz real quick, do you think, how much of an impact does he play in what they do in the draft? And how much confidence do you have in Markel yourself?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. Here's what I'll say. If we're talking about Luka Doncic, and that's going to be a guy who's probably going to, we're probably going to talk about a lot, because in order to move up to the top 5 in the draft, you're going to have to give up something.
Right.
I don't know if that's Markel. I don't know if that's, you know, Dario maybe. I don't know if that's eating a bad contract, but you're going to have to give up something. I think Markel has a higher ceiling than Luka Doncic, and I say that pretty easily. The thing is, I have no idea what the probability of Markel reaching that ceiling is, whereas Doncic's a little bit safer. I can see Doncic stepping out and averaging, you know, 12, 5, and 5 on an NBA court tomorrow. He's just that advanced skill-wise. So I think Doncic is safer, but Markel still has a world of upside. He's out there working with Drew Hanlon right now, who's one of the best in the business in terms of rehabbing and overworking somebody's shot, so I think that's a good sign. I would be a little bit surprised right now if we saw him in summer league. I still think Markel Fultz has a ton of upside, but again, that probability I have no real way to gauge. I'm not sure anyone does until we see him play again.
When you look at the offseason, the free agent big three, Kawhi, LeBron, and Paul George, how do you think the Sixers prioritize those three, and do you think ultimately they land one of them? Or two of them.
Yeah, well, I think the interesting thing about Kawhi is you don't really have to make a decision. It doesn't have to be Kawhi or LeBron. It doesn't have to be Kawhi or Paul George.
Right.
You can structure a trade so you can send back as much salary as you're getting and still have the money to go out there and pursue those guys. If anything, you know, trading for Kawhi now makes it more likely or makes it so that LeBron would have more interest in you come July 1st. So I don't think you have to really prioritize him. You know, Kawhi's great because he fits in pretty seamlessly. He's only 26 years old. He's still got a year left at relatively cheap salary. But it's very much not an either-or. You know, in terms of LeBron, Paul George, I mean, if you have a chance to get LeBron James, you just kind of do it. I don't think there's a whole lot of debate on there. I know Paul George would fit seamlessly. He's a little bit – you don't have to rework your team as much. But LeBron James is LeBron James, and he kind of speaks for himself. I would prioritize LeBron James and move from there. But if you get any of the three, it's a great outcome. Odds they get it, odds they get any of those three, probably a little less than 50-50. But I think they have a real shot. You know, I think the Vegas odds most recent had the Sixers at the second most likely team for LeBron and third for Kawhi. It may have shifted a little bit, but Vegas thinks there's a chance. So,
lastly, what does the whole GM fiasco, how much does that play a role in this? Do you think they hire a GM anytime soon, or is it Brett Brown's show for the draft at least?
I think it's certainly Brett Brown's show for the draft, and I think it very well may be for a free agency as well. It wouldn't surprise me to see this GM search, you know, drag on until mid-July, maybe even a little bit later.
All right, Derek, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Derek Bonner of The Athletic, 888-729-9494. There's so much to talk about when it comes to the Sixers. You know, you have the Markelle Fultz thing. You have Ben Simmons summer. You have the Embiid stuff. I mean, there's always Embiid stuff. You have the on-the-court stuff. You have Brett Brown in the GM search. You have the draft. You have the free agency. You have LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George. I mean, there's just so much to talk about when it comes to the Sixers. I can do 24 hours on the Sixers. But we'll talk Phillies, too. I mean, we will. We can. Or we could talk Sixers still. I don't know. 888-729-9494. At 9 o'clock at least, we're going to talk more NBA draft and get into more of the prospect stuff with Ilan Vinokurov from Scout U. At 9:30-ish, a physician's assistant on Michael Porter Jr. Look, Michael Porter Jr., think about this. His name's Michael Porter Jr. My name's Andrew Porter. There's nothing more that would excite me than a Porter playing for the Sixers. His parents' names are Lisa and Michael Porter. My parents' names are Lisa and Michael Porter. I mean, this guy, it would be perfect. I was all on board until this back stuff scares me. It's so scary, and I'm talking about risk-averse for the Sixers. Michael Porter Jr. is the most risky thing in the draft since probably Joel Embiid. Andrew Porter Show, WIP Sports Times, 838.
Oh, Hector Naris,
888-729-9494. It's the Andrew Porter Show. Look, the Phillies are, what a crazy game today. They won. They won the game, 10-9. Ultimately, they win the game. And they're 23rd in the league in hitting. They hit .231 as a team. They're 13th in pitching, 3.81 ERA. Even worse, their bullpen's like bottom 10. So their relieving's bottom 10. They're dead last in fielding, 53 errors in the season. So basically, they have one hitter, Odubel Herrera. They have one pitcher, Aaron Nola. I mean, Arrieta has been inconsistent, to say the least. And they have one reliever, and Sir Anthony Dominguez. That's it. I mean, that's really it. Hoskins is coming back. He's hitting home runs, but he hasn't been great this year. And they're 37-32, four games back of the Braves and a half game back of the wild card. And we talk about, like, the hot topic to complain about seems to be Gabe Kapler. I would say Gabe Kapler is having an excellent season. I mean, he's just making these wacky changes and pushing these buttons and doing whatever it takes. Seven pitchers and Jake Thompson, and the lineup changes every night. He doesn't know. He's got four outfielders. He doesn't know who to play where. He's got injuries. You know, he's already dealt with key injuries to Crawford and Hoskins, and has had injured relievers. You know, he's just done stuff to figure it out, and through, you know, what, 69 games, they have 37 wins. I don't know. I'm okay with that. I can't complain. I would give him a solid B so far this season. I really think that ultimately he's figuring it out. Whichever way you want to slice it, he's figuring it out, and they're winning games. And the encouraging part is they haven't hit, really. You know, they haven't been great. Their pitching was supposed to be suspect heading into the season, but we expected them to hit. They haven't hit. So if the Phillies can get hot, and they have an incredibly difficult stretch coming up over the next, what, 9 or to 12 games, over the next few series, it's like the Cardinals and the Yankees. I mean, they just have a brutal stretch coming up. But if they get after that, I mean, they'll probably go like 4-7 over their next 11, and people will freak out because that's what people do. But then they'll get easier. The games will get easier. They maybe make a move at the deadline. And the bats will get hot. As you see, Hoskins is getting hot. Herrera's getting hot again. You know, Kingery's starting to hit a little bit. Franco, you know, you never know. I don't really count on him, but whatever. A couple guys get hot. And, you know, maybe this team competes for the playoffs. At least they're flirting with 500 through maybe through July into August. They're into the playoff race. I mean, that's all you could ask for. That's a successful season. And then they'll figure it out in the offseason. I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. I think that Gabe Kapler's done a pretty good job. I would have to give him a B so far. 888-729-9490 for real quick on the World Cup, too. I want to talk about soccer. You know, isn't that crazy? I want to talk about soccer. And, like, the America's not in the World Cup this year, which is such a Debbie Downer. Because, to me, the and the NBA is the best league in America right now. To me, I know I'm in the minority. Most people would say the NFL, but it's clearly basketball and football. 1-2, whichever way you want to slice it. Football, number one in America. NFL is king. But the NBA has done a great job over the last 5 years, and the offseason has been amazing. And they've closed the gap, and they're closing the gap. College football and college basketball are the top two. So, you know, football, basketball rule the world. Baseball and hockey have declined. Soccer is such a good sport to watch, man. It really is. I know people give it so much crap and people make fun of it and people don't like it. And that's a lot of that has to do with we don't have a horse in the race. Like MLS stinks and we haven't really gravitated towards the MLS. But around the world, the star power in soccer is amazing. And some of these games have been so good. Ronaldo scoring a hat trick and tying that game a few days ago. Today, Brazil tie, you know, drawing with whoever they played, like whatever. Brazil didn't win. Mexico upsets Germany. So like there has been some really cool moments. It's a really fun sport to watch because it's no commercials. It's straight through. You have 45 minutes of soccer halftime, 45 minutes of soccer. That's literally what it is every time. Now there's going to be guys complaining, but I'm sure if someone from Spain or from Italy turned on an NBA game, they would say these guys complain nonstop. You know, it's the same thing. Guys are, and in the NFL, they complain nonstop. People complain to the refs. I know that it's a little melodramatic in soccer, but that's the way the sport is. It's so important around the world, and America just doesn't really have a grasp on it. And I'm not like this big soccer guy, but I do enjoy it. It's an enjoyable sport to watch. And when you have a horse in the race, like place a bet. Like, go place a bet on a World Cup game and sit there and watch it. You will be on the edge of your seat the whole entire 90 minutes because that one goal changes the whole course of the game. And it's not about the scoring. It's just very entertaining. It's up and down. And now it's not like hockey up and down, but it's up. It's flowing. It's free flowing sport action, and I enjoy it. It's way better than the U.S. Open. 888-729-9494. And Joe Giglio made that point on Twitter. I agree with him. I mean, golf on a Sunday used to be great because of Tiger, but I don't know. Soccer to me, baseball, full nine innings of baseball or a soccer game, it's just straight product. Soccer's more enjoyable. I mean, you have the Phillies to root for, so that's why you're engaged more in the baseball game because you have a rooting interest. But if America was in the World Cup or if the MLS was big and the Union were good, it would be different. And I think soccer would catch on. It's a really interesting sport, and I give it some credit. We're talking Sixers a lot tonight. 9 o'clock, coming up in about 10 minutes. Elon Vinokurov, president, owner, EV Hoops, and Scout U. I'm going to get his thoughts on a lot of things about the NBA draft. I'm not into the Luka Doncic thing. I'm not moving up for Luka Doncic. I know Derek mentioned how much he likes him as a great passer. I don't think we need another great passer. I know maybe that's narrow-minded, but I don't think it is. I think the Sixers are so defined in what they need. They have Ben Simmons. He's going to have the ball. Ben Simmons is going to play 40 to 42 minutes a night and have the ball for 80% of the time. So, like, I don't know. Saric is a good passer. They have good passers. They have plenty of good. Like, Simmons is going to control the offense. Embiid is going to control the paint on defense and dominate the defensive side of the ball. That's going to be there. Embiid and Simmons will kingpin your team for 10, hopefully 15 years. You just need to fill in with wings. Big, long, athletic wings who can shoot. Make foul shots. Don't turn the ball over. Can do things in and out of an offense. Can make shots. Mikal Bridges fits that mold perfectly, beautifully. It's almost like you drew it up like that way. I mean, if you just look at his profile, he shot 90% from the foul line his second year and 80-some percent his third year at Nova. He shot 43% in college from three. He can really shoot the ball, and he's athletic. Oh, we got some World Cup calls coming in. I love it. All right, Phil in Pemberton wants to talk about the World Cup. What's up, Phil?
Yo, what's going on, man? Evening.
How's it going?
It's going good, man. Just wanted to comment on the World Cup.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I caught that Iceland-Argentina game the other day.
Right.
And that was a real good draw. Just wanted to say that MLS, I'm an MLS fan. I'm a Union fan.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of Union fans around the area. I get that, you know. A lot of old heads listening to the radio.
Yeah.
You know, baseball and stuff like that.
I like the Union, too.
Yeah, yeah. I like to catch the games. They're not doing so hot this year.
Right.
Jim Curtin being the head coach for all these years. Got us to the playoffs once, you know, haven't been back since. I personally think that they need to find someone else to run the team. You know, he's losing all his guys up top, too, like Ernie went over to the GM of the U.S. soccer team,
mm-hmm.
and then they lost their coordinator last year. But anyway, yeah, the World Cup's looking pretty awesome. Soccer, you know, it is a good sport. Like you said, 45 minutes of action. Halftime, 45 more minutes, you know?
Yep, yeah, I agree. It's fun to watch. And that atmosphere down there for the Union games is fun. I've been down there for a game or two, and it's a good time. I mean, it really is. It's like you're always engaged in the game. It's not like other sports. Like, we completely ignore the fact that soccer is like the fastest, best TV watching, best really watching sport out there. I mean, hockey's really great, but hockey hasn't caught on in America either. And there's more stoppages. There's three periods. And there's just, I don't know. It's just not a good product. There's no star power in hockey. In soccer, I mean, Ronaldo and Messi, some of the things that Christian Bale, like some of those things that, or Garrett Bale, I'm sorry. Some of those things that these guys do are just incredible. Joe in Upper Darby wants to get in too. What's up, Joe?
What's going on, man? So back in 94, obviously the World Cup was here in the U.S. And me and my dad traveled up and down the East Coast to the Meadowlands, down to D.C., and that made an impact. And I think it's a big deal right now that everybody's watching. It sucks with the U.S. in there, obviously, and everybody's going to harp on that, like, U.S. in there, U.S. in there, whatever.
Right.
I get it, okay? It sucks. But it's such a big moment in sports, and everybody realizes that every 4 years. Right.
And yeah, you can argue the biggest
for the Union, like all about it, but the U.S. isn't there, you know, and it hurts.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So, and the fact, like the games, that Spain Portugal game was amazing.
Amazing.
And that gave
amazing.
Everybody what, like, that's what soccer can be. That's what it can be. Open, flow, goal scoring. Opportunities, and there has been great games like the Brazil game today. Obviously, it wasn't open enough. It happens, but it's still a beautiful game, and I love that everybody gets to see that once every 4 years. That how amazing it is, and maybe it'll bring more people down to the Union game, because you're right, that atmosphere down there for every game is amazing.
It's so fun
to go down there.
It really is. Thanks for the call, Joe. And that's kind of how it is at the Wells Fargo Center with the Flyers. And people don't like hockey. I just encourage you to go to a game. Just try to learn the game and go to a game. And people don't like soccer. And they say, you know, these people that don't like soccer, they sit up here and criticize soccer. It's not like I'm this big soccer fan. I never really enjoyed playing the sport. I was never good at it. But I can appreciate the beauty of it. And the game itself, it's not a boring game. If you actually learn it and watch it, it's enjoyable. just like any other sport. You can't tell me baseball is more enjoyable to watch than soccer. That's kind of crazy to me. I mean, we're all biased because we've been watching baseball since we were 3 years old and playing baseball. But if you just look at it, the products at its core face value, soccer's more enjoyable. It's faster. It's better. It's more entertaining. 888-729-9494. Elon Vinokurov, Scout U, coming up on the other side to talk about the NBA draft. It's the Andrew Porter Show. It's 8:56. It's the Andrew Porter Show on 94WIP. It's 9 o'clock. 888-729-9494 gets you into the show. You can tweet me throughout the show and whenever you want. Follow me at AND_Porter on Twitter. We're hanging out talking a lot of Sixers. Little World Cup mixed in there, but a lot of Sixers, a lot of NBA draft. And now joining me is Elon Vinokurov from Scout U and EV Hoops at Elon Vino on Twitter, an NBA draft specialist. What's up, Elon?
Hey, man. Doing well. Enjoying Father's Day weekend. How you doing?
Good. It's that time of year again. You're doing your media rounds. You're the guy here everyone wants to talk to and get a little info on how you're viewing the NBA draft. So I'll just start first and foremost. How do you view this class as a whole?
It's not the same class I think we've seen in recent years. Like when you would compare it to like a Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram class, I don't feel like you have two legitimate guys at the top that people are in love with. Ben was that no-brainer number one overall pick. Brandon Ingram, no-brainer number two. And it doesn't feel like last year where we had a really deep draft. I remember people talking about last year's draft when it was a year out and saying that the 2017 draft had at least six or seven future All-Stars. This does not feel like that type of draft. There's interesting guys. There's no no-brainer, surefire number one overall pick. And I wouldn't say the back end of the top 10 has the depth of last year. But every draft is a matter of perspective, and there are interesting guys nonetheless.
I agree. And the one guy that pops to me is Mo Bamba. I don't know what's your take on Mo Bamba, but he's gotten a lot of pub lately from ESPN and stuff like that. But he kind of pops to me if there's anyone in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a legit seven-footer. He's got tantalizing wingspan. Someone that's been shooting three since high school. When he played at West Town before he got to Texas, he was ripping rebounds off the rim and pushing himself. Didn't really get to do that at Texas. Really just kind of played an anchor role. And I never thought that they'd let him flirt with a lot of offensive expansion, dribble stuff, dribble drive, dribble handoffs. He didn't really get to do much of that. But you're hoping that his offense can come around the league, the three-point shot can become legit, which I think it can. The rest of his offensive game, I have legitimate question marks about. Not a comfortable low-post player, never has been, might never be. Not a great lob threat as much as his length and athleticism and size, that whole combination would suggest he should be. Doesn't have this relentless, reckless approach to just going, grabbing boards and flushing them down in traffic. He's also incredibly weak. He's got to be stronger in his core. He's got to be stronger in his legs. I do think that the defensive upside is intriguing, but right now he's going to be attacked as a post defender because he's so weak, and he's got to become someone who thinks 5% less on defense and actually just flies around with recklessness, fearlessness, physicality 20% more. Because right now there's too many plays that he's just not a part of because he's overthinking the game.
The Sixers are picking, they have six picks, but number 10 is the big high-profile pick right now. The three guys they've worked out that are the 6'7 wings. Compare and contrast the three, Mikal Bridges, Kevin Knox, and Miles Bridges. Compare and contrast those three.
So Kevin Knox is the guy with the highest upside. He's a legitimate scorer. He's pushing 6'9", someone that could continue to grow. Younger player, one of the younger players in this draft. Father played in the NFL. He's got those pro bloodlines that you'd love to see, somebody who can help him navigate the pro landscape. Really didn't nail it as the number one go-to guy for Kentucky. They actually seemed to take off when Gilgeous Alexander supplanted him and Kevin Knox served more of a Robin to his Batman. But I think he's got somebody that didn't totally make sense for college. He was oversized. He played the three exclusively. He never got to play a mismatch four, and the defenders were just too small for him. So he's bowling guys over. He's trying to figure out how to balance physicality with finesse. And that often veered towards finesse and jump shots because I just don't think his size made sense for that position in college. In the NBA, he'll make a lot more sense. He's going to be a killer mid-range shooter. He's going to run guys off screens. He He's going to grow as a scorer. The question with him is, can he defend, can he rebound, can he pass? Mikal Bridges, prototypical 3-and-D guy, really got better every year at Villanova. He's going to be someone that comes in and is nailing threes either off the catch or curling around off screens. Not going to be much of a dribbler early, and might never be, but there is something there to explore. Good cutter. I don't think he's going to be a self-created slasher. I also don't think he's a defensive stopper, which is what some built him to be. I think he's just a above-average defender and a terrific team defender, someone that's always in the right place, great instincts, perfect for switching, really high floor. I'm skeptical about his upside. And Miles Bridges is a tweener. He's someone that's kind of stuck between the 3 and the 4. No one really, like, you could pull 10 scouts, and I think you'd be all over the place on whether they view him as a small forward or a power forward.
Mm-hmm.
And some might say that doesn't matter. Today's league is positionless. But to me, Miles Bridges is positionless, not versatile. We don't know what he is yet, and that's a problem because he might not be quick enough to take threes off the dribble, and he does not have any semblance of interior post-up game, physical junk, to abuse guys around the rim with some powerful junkyard dog type game. That's not him. He's also struggled defensively in the past. He doesn't feel comfortable guarding threes or even tweeners. He's going to have to keep slimming down, keep improving his skill set, and hope that with time it figures itself out. But he's somebody that I would just kind of flag and say, if he's drafted too high, he could really disappoint.
Elon Vinokurov joining us from EV Hoops Scout. You at Elon Vino on Twitter. I will get to Michael Porter Jr. in a second, but besides Michael Porter Jr., is there anyone else the Sixers should consider at 10? I know Lonnie Walker's name has been out there, but anyone else they really should consider than those three wings?
I like Lonnie Walker. I think that's a very interesting pick at 10. I think if he's there, he makes a lot of sense as a defender, a shooter, someone with a lot of upside. He just needs to tighten up his ball handling. But if Trae Young starts falling, which I think is doubtful, I think he's going to go top 7. If he slips to the back end of top 7, I would try to trade up for him. He's someone that fits this team better than people might think. He can play on and off the ball, gives them an elite shooter. The Sixers are perfectly suited to mask his defensive warts with how these guys can cross-check positions, how Covington can guard 1 through 3. Ben can guard every position. Joel can switch. Like, this could be the right team for Trey to come on and hide him defensively as he tries to figure it out. If he's falling, I would target him, though I really feel confident he'll go top 7. And if you're looking for somebody to fall, it's probably going to be Michael Porter Jr. if he doesn't go 2, and it's probably going to be Luka Doncic, who I would anticipate falling a little bit on draft night.
If you look at the Sixers' draft philosophy, how much does Markelle Fultz come into the equation, and how much do you trust Markelle Fultz to become, you know, some sort of NBA viable player here?
You have to hope that your talent evaluation on him holds true,
mm-hmm.
and that by going to a new trainer, you know, a highly reputable one in Drew Hanlon, he can fix the jump shot. But that's not everything here. Like, the jump shot's great, and if he fixes it, that really makes the calculus look a lot more optimistic. But he's got to become more mature. He's just such a kid right now. And that's okay. It's not the end of the world. But we've seen a lot of guys bust when they're drafted too high, and they come into the league as kids, as children, and they never totally grow out of that, or they do too late. He's got to mature. He's got to realize that this is a job, and people are going to take your job if you don't take it seriously. The sooner he realizes that and the sooner the jump shot comes around, the sooner we'll know if the talent evaluation was right. And I think it was right. I think this kid was a really talented kid. But he's still a kid. And if he doesn't grow up this summer and recognize what's at stake, it may never happen.
All right, so you could either move up for the Sixers. There's rumors that they can move up for Luka Doncic. They could, you know, maybe Michael Porter Jr. slides back to 10. Are either of those high upside, high risky picks worth it, or moves worth it?
I would rather, like, if Luka's falling, I get the scheme fit and the idea of him, even if it's just to dangle him in front of some teams that might be intrigued, like a San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But Luka does make some sense. He's got to learn how to play a little bit more without the ball. But I'm always a fan of putting talented passers with talented passers. Maybe it's because I grew up watching the 2001 Sacramento Kings and loved that team, and I loved, you know, the Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash at the helm. But put this kid on a team with Ben Simmons and Darius Saric, I'm intrigued. Is it worth trading up for? I think it depends also if you feel like that might improve your chances at a Kawhi. Michael Porter Jr., if he's falling, let him fall. I don't want anything to do with somebody that has back injuries and has had them for multiple years. He would terrify me, and he might be someone that is only playing about 41 games next year, and you may constantly be wondering if he's ever going to play 82.
I agree. Lastly, before we get you out, and thanks a lot, Elon Vinokurov, do you have any names that fans can look for at 26 if the Sixers stay there and keep that pick?
If Dante DiVincenzo's there, I think he's a very intriguing bucket getter to kind of groom off the bench, whether that's to immediately take someone like Bellinelli's role or eventually take someone like that. I like the idea of bringing him in, although I don't think he'll actually be available. I don't think he'll fall that far. Javon Carter could be an interesting guy to target. Gary Trent. Javon Carter's out of West Virginia. High-level defender, three-point shooter, mid-range shooter, elite intangibles. Could play with high-usage playmakers and just settle in a Patrick Beverley, Derek Fisher type way. The other guy would be Gary Trent out of Duke, one-and-done kid, the son of Gary Trent, former NBA player, a.k.a. the Shaq of the Mac. Gary Trent is one of the best three-point shooters in this draft. He's got some Wayne Ellington to him with upside to explore, as this was a scorer in high school, but Coach K really boxed him into a finite role.
No Grayson Allen?
Grayson Allen could be interesting, but I'd rather shoot for some youth instead of bringing the guy that time and time again has disappointed when you needed him to really step up.
Fair enough. Elon Vinokurov, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks, Elon Vinokurov. Give him a follow at Elon Vino on Twitter. 888-729-9494. Grayson Allen at 26 would be so fun. He's like the ultimate sports radio draft pick. Just draft this controversial white guy from Duke and let's just let everyone fight about it. I kind of like Grayson Allen. I mean, he's athletic. I mean, people think of him as this non-athletic kid who shoots from Duke like J.J. Redick. He's nothing like J.J. Redick. He's completely different player than J.J. Redick. He's longer. He's athletic. He's really athletic. He can jump. He can score off the bounce. I don't know if he can do that at the NBA level, but he's done a lot more in college from an offensive standpoint than you'd think, and he's a lot more athletic than people project. I kind of like Grayson Allen at 26, but I do like Dante DiVincenzo more. Javion Carter's a good one, too. So it'll be interesting. And at 10, Mikal Bridges is my guy. Coming up around 9:25 is my physician's assistant, my buddy Stan Boro. He's going to give us the lowdown on Michael Porter Jr. And it's like I'm super conflicted on Michael Porter Jr., but I'm talking about, I love him. His parents' names are the same as mine. His name's the same as mine. Porter on the Sixers would be great for me and my brand, Porter on the Sixers. It's awesome. But I can't get behind it because truth is I'm preaching the risk-averse philosophy, and he's too risky. I mean, I don't want a guy with back surgery. Just not for this team. The Sixers aren't the team to gamble on this kind of guy. They need a guy who's reliable, who can play, who can give them contributions and make this team better, because all they're looking to do really is go from 52 wins to 57, 58 wins, and that doesn't take that much. You know, they only need 4, 5, 6 more wins to get that number one seed in the East. And they're going to vie for the number one seed in the East next year, and they can't afford a swing and a miss. They don't need a swing for the fences anymore. And they have defined roles. They have a really good basketball team. They just need a single up the middle or a double in the gap. You know, a Mikal Bridges, let him work. Maybe he gets better at ball handling and ISO. You know, maybe he really grows as a three-point shooter and becomes this 40-plus percent three-point shooter in the NBA. You know, he has a really good shooting prospect profile. He shoots really well. His free throw percentage is really high. His three-point percentage is really high. He has the profile of a really, really good NBA 3-and-D player. I think, a Harrison Barnes type of player, someone like that. I mean, it's really valuable in the NBA. You need guys like that. That's why I like Mikal Bridges. 888-729-9494. Coming up on the other side, physician's assistant Stan Boro on Michael Porter Jr. We'll know exactly whether the Sixers should gamble on him or not. It's the Andrew Porter Show. It's 9:15. 888-729-9494. Tweet me at AND_Porter. It's the Andrew Porter Show. A lot of Sixers talk, a lot of NBA draft talk coming up in just a few minutes. Physician's assistant Stan Boro is going to talk about Michael Porter Jr. and his back injury and how serious it is and why I really think the Sixers should avoid him, honestly, even if he does fall to 10, which pains me to say because his name's Porter, so it hurts. But Steve wants to talk a little bit about the World Cup and that stuff. What's up, Steve?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Andrew. I just wanted to bring up a point that you mentioned earlier. You gave a little glance to hockey and compared it to how soccer's great. It's got two 45-minute action-packed halves, and that's something that people should really appreciate. But what I think is really overlooked about hockey is rather than having a guy on for 45 minutes, you know, jogging around and getting sweaty, and I really think that's a tough job. In hockey, you're looking at guys who are playing 45-second to a minute shifts, and they're going balls to the wall for the entire time that they're on the ice.
Yeah,
and,
but and I could argue. Go ahead. I could argue that is a negative for hockey because like the stars come off the ice a little bit. But I see your point.
Sure. And I think that's actually another interesting point I want to bring up regarding star power. Hockey, in my opinion at least, is much more of a team sport. No one guy can dominate a team and take them to a championship. I mean, you take a guy, in my opinion, the best guy in the league, Connor McDavid, 109 points in his sophomore season. Even that guy can't even take a team to the playoffs. He's going to play maybe 20 minutes a game. Your top defensemen in the league are going to play something like 30 minutes. Most household names are not even defensemen, but in my opinion, those are some of the most unsung heroes in the entire sport.
No, I agree.
You know, there's a real grinders out there. So when it comes to star power, I don't think necessarily goals and points should be the stat that we're looking at. Maybe we look at somebody like a Devontae Smith-Pelly, who on the Washington Capitals this past playoffs, who had 7 goals in the regular season, tallies another 7 in the playoffs, and nobody bats an eye about it. He's a third liner playing absolutely out of his mind, out of a role that he shouldn't even be in. He got moved up to Ovechkin's line, I think it was in the final or the last 2 games of the Stanley Cup Finals, and really he gets no light of the day about it. So when it comes to superstars in that sport, you really need to look past just the guys that are putting up big numbers like your Crosby and your Ovechkin. It's your supporting role guys that are going to make your team a solid team in the National Hockey League.
Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And I'm a big hockey guy. I love hockey. And Steve's obviously a hockey fanatic. But the problem is, like, I don't disagree with Steve, but the point is, people want to watch stars. Like, the NBA works because people watch LeBron James. They watch the best of the best. They watch James Harden. They watch, you know, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. They can market those stars. The leagues market stars. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. People don't care. You know, you win games because of Chris Long and Brandon Graham, but people don't care. People want to, they watch the quarterbacks. You know, that's how the NFL works. And, you know, you win games because, Draymond Green makes a nice block or a steal. You know, it's the same way in every sport. They're all team sports, but we watch stars. That's what these leagues market. And soccer, basketball, and football do the best job in marketing their stars. Hockey doesn't do a great job of marketing. Connor McDavid, a lot of people don't even know who that is, which is sad to say. He's one of the best young players, if not the best player in hockey, and a lot of people couldn't even pick him out of a lineup. So I think hockey and baseball need to do a better job in marketing stars if they want their sports to grow. I don't think it makes the sport better or worse, but if they want to grow their sports. All right, time for the physician's assistant, Stan in the Northeast. What's up, Stan?
Mr. Porter, thanks for having me. How you doing?
Thanks for joining us. I want to get into Michael Porter Jr. and all his issues, if you will. You know, a lot of things have been going on with Michael Porter Jr., a guy who I really love because his parents are Lisa and Michael Porter, just like myself. So I obviously like him. I was hoping he would follow the Sixers originally. I followed him a lot, but now he cancels a workout last week because of hip spasms. He had back surgery in November at a young age. I mean, he's a 19-year-old kid having back surgery. Are you concerned about Michael Porter Jr.?
I would definitely be concerned about Michael Porter Jr. You hear the term back pain, back surgery. Really what he has is he had to have back surgery because he was having pain that was going down his leg. I mean, originally the report came out that he tweaked his hip and then he had a leg injury, and really what that means is he had pain that was radiating from his back, irritating his nerve and going down his leg. So at 19 years old, that's pretty concerning.
And this kid, this like back surgery isn't common for people that are, you know, 20 years old and under, right? Like that obviously could affect him and very well should affect him long term, right?
I mean, there's different reasons why people have back surgery at different ages, but in his situation, he had a herniated disc that they went in there and they cleaned up, did a microdiscectomy. Clearly, that was something that they felt was compressing the nerve, and that to me in itself is concerning. The fact that he is that age and that was the cause. You know, you go in there to clean something up that is irritating a nerve that in a 19-year-old kid, he should be in the best shape of his life.
And like Joel Embiid, people say Joel Embiid had back problems and he's okay, but he didn't have surgery, right? Like he had a stress fracture in his back. That's a lot different than what Michael Porter Jr. has.
Yeah, that's a little different there. I mean, when you have an injury that is causing this, what's called radiculopathy, when you have nerve pain, whether it's weakness, numbness, or shooting pain that's going down into your leg like he had, they get an MRI, they see he's got this herniated disc, and they go to clean it up. I mean, there's a chance that that wasn't even what was causing his pain. A lot of people, if you were to just take 100 people off the street and get an MRI, maybe a third of them would have herniated discs, but they have no back pain. So not always the herniated disc that is necessarily causing the back pain.
So is it possible he has a long career in the NBA and like recovers from this, or is that just very unlikely in your eyes?
No, he absolutely could recover from this. I mean, you got guys like Rob Gronkowski in the NFL. Would you say he's an elite tight end, right? You
right.
would agree.
Yep.
He's had 3 back surgeries in the past, but that's the thing, is that he continues to have these back surgeries. That's always a risk you take when you have this one back surgery. Here he is. He's played 3 games since then. Now he's having these hip spasms. I mean, that could easily be related to his initial back injury, because this pain is radiating down his leg. A lot of people who come in that present to the hospital, they might have hip pain, and then you find out it's really a back nerve issue, you know? So the point is, he could easily have a good career. Rob Gronkowski, I would say he's a stud athlete. He's doing fine. But at the same time, he's at an increased risk. He might need surgery again down the road. There might not be that longevity you really hope for a guy who's should be a top 10 pick.
Right, and even Rob Gronkowski is constantly dealing with this pain tolerance and this issue every season, it seems like, and he's even talking about retiring now. Like, it's clearly a problem that's lingering as he gets into his 30s.
Yeah, I mean, back in, like, 2012, Dwight Howard, he had a microdiscectomy. Pretty sure that was he never returned back to his original form before that surgery. I mean, you got a guy like, this is a little different, but like Tiger Woods, remember when he had his back surgeries and he had to go back and have an additional surgery because the first surgery he had really didn't take care of the problem?
Right.
You know, when you have back surgery, you're going in there. There's different kinds of back surgery, but in his case, they're doing a microdiscectomy. They're going in there. They're removing some of that disc that is irritating that nerve.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Anything else? You have more to add here?
No, I mean, that's just it's very concerning, I think, going forward for a guy who's that young and has to have surgery. Who knows whether you're going to have multiple surgeries in the future? Who knows if he never gets bothered by it again? He's clearly already being bothered by it. He had an MRI immediately after. So you clearly see that they're checking his back out again, even though it's called hip spasms. My guess is that's coming from his back.
So you're not gambling on him if you're the Sixers?
I don't see why you would gamble on him if you're the Sixers.
I agree. All right, Stan Boro. Thanks a lot, Stan.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. There he is, Stan Boro, the physician's assistant in Northeast Philadelphia, a good friend of mine. Good stuff. And he kind of confirmed what I thought. I wouldn't gamble on him if I'm the Sixers, just because, you know, like I said, they're in a risk-averse situation here. At 52-win team, they're growing. They have 2 perennial stars already on the roster, superstars, dare I say. To the best young tandem in the game. They don't need to gamble on these high-ceiling, low-floor guys. Michael Porter has the lowest floor in the entire draft. Maybe the highest ceiling, but he has the lowest floor, making him the most volatile player in the draft. I would stay away from that if I'm the Sixers and float more along the lines of someone with the highest floor, like a Mikal Bridges, who just fits everything they need to a T. He's got the character. He's got the IQ. He's been through conflict. He's a champion already. He's played under Jay Wright. He's not this McDonald's All-American who needs the ball and needs to average 20 a game. He's not seeking superstardom. He's just seeking a long, prosperous NBA career. Prosperous NBA career. It's hard, you know, when you talk forever, you misspeak every now and then. 888-729-9494. But that's Mikal Bridges for you. You know, he's just a kid that just wants to play ball, make it in the NBA, pay some bills, make some millions. You know, he's not going to shake it up. Kevin Knox is upside guy, talented, can score, can do all these things. He's a McDonald's All-American who wants to be a perennial All-Star and get a max contract one day. And the Sixers don't have room for all these max contract players. And to me, I think Markelle Fultz is a potential another guy who's a max contract. You can only pay so many guys. You can only have so many perennial All-Stars. So you need to start fitting the puzzle pieces in, you know. Golden State was able to do what they've been able to do. And people talk about because Steph was hurt, which is true, and they were able to get Steph on a nice contract. But really, they draft, and Clay was a great draft pick, but they were able to find a second-round pick in Draymond Green. And that's the difference. You know, so the Spurs were able to find a second-round pick in Manu Ginobili. That sets you over the top. I mean, you can find a second-round pick or a non-top 10 pick that can come in and be really good, an all-star type player. I mean, now you're changing the franchise. Now you're getting a really cheap franchise-changing player for, you know, such a valuable commodity. And the Sixers have so many second-round pick opportunities. They have the pick 26. So gamble with those. You know, gamble at 26. Take some swings and take some hacks at 26 and in the second round. At 10, I'm taking Mikal Bridges, a guy who I know will come in right away at 22 years old and will make foul shots, play defense, and make threes. I mean, he's going to make threes, so he's going to help you. At 6'7", he can hit open threes. I mean, instantly, that's a value. They don't have guys that can do that. I mean, they have Robert Covington, but they don't have athletic guys. You know, Ersan Ilyasova and Markel Bellinelli, you don't know if they're back. And if you take them off this roster, and J.J. Redick for that matter, if you take those guys off the roster, you're left with Covington and Dario, the only three-point shooters on the roster. And Covington's a guy who can't do anything but shoot the ball. He's not a good ball handler. He can't score off the dribble. He doesn't score in transition. God, I mean, God, if he goes to the basket, just turn the TV off. It's a mess. So Mikal Bridges is a guy who can do, he's not elite at those other things, but he is really good at a lot of things. I mean, there's nothing he's bad at. He's a plus player at pretty much every category, and he's going to learn and he's going to get better. You can bet on that. Like, he's not a guy you want to bet against. 888-729-9494. Final segment coming up of the Andrew Porter Show at 10 o'clock. It's Paul Jolovitz. Maybe we'll cross for a few minutes and get Paul's thoughts on all this stuff, Phillies and Sixers and whatever else he wants to get into. It's the Andrew Porter Show. It's 935. Andrew Porter Show, 942. 888-729-9494. Paul Jolovitz coming up in 15 minutes or so. He's going to cross with me in about 10. You know, we're hanging out here. Wired This Way, I wanted to promote this little plug. I started a new podcast. It's called Wired This Way. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Just search Wired This Way with Andrew Porter. And basically, the podcast is me interviewing the top sports personalities in Philadelphia sports. They tell their life stories. It's very interesting. We start from their childhood and we go on until their careers. And you get a glimpse into who these guys are. First episode was Angelo Cataldi. The second episode I released last week was Howard Eskin. Tomorrow I will release Ray Dittinger. Coming up is Merrill Reese. I'll do Trey Thomas and Ike Reese. Chris Wheeler I've interviewed. So and on and on, and I'm going to try to get more and more people, and hopefully this can, you know, I can get some athletes eventually and some coaches, and, you know, maybe a Phil Martelli and Jay Wright will come on. And we'll do some cool people. I'll get into maybe some of the people inside the Eagles and the Sixers and stuff like that, and I think you'll enjoy it. It's not something I'm just taking lightly. It's heavily produced, and there's It's nicely done, I would like to think. It's getting some good traction. So give it a shot if you're into that stuff, if you like Angelo and Howard and you're interested in the lives. I mean, Ike Reese's story is really interesting. So if you're interested in that and those people and different people in sports, if you want to get into sports and you're a young college kid or you're an intern and you want to learn about how these guys and what they did to get into the industry, it's also interesting in that regard. So give it a whirl. Wired This Way with Andrew Porter. Search that. On Thursday night, NBA draft coverage on WIP. Joe Giglio, myself, and one other person I'm forgetting. I should know this, but I'm going to check the texts that I just got. Mike O'Connor from The Athletic, and some guests throughout the night. So that's 6 to 10 on WIP. Give us a call, listen in. It's going to be a fun draft because the Sixers have 6 picks, not just the 10th pick in the draft that people are focused on. And there's rumors that they're going to move up. There's rumors that, you know, who knows what they're going to do with those other 5 picks. You know, you have names at 10 that we're talking about. You have the Kawhi Leonard stuff to throw in the mix. You have the GM and Brett Brown situation. You have, you know, Grayson Allen's name being out there, Dante DiVincenzo, a bunch of local guys, Mikal Bridges. So there's a lot of intrigue for the Sixers in terms of the whole summer from an NBA offseason standpoint, but the draft especially, and the NBA. I mean, I love the NBA draft. I think it's a great event. It's quick, it's short, and teams do a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of moving, wheeling and dealing, and it's a lot of fun. So 6 to 10 WIP on Thursday, myself, Joe, and O'Connor from The Athletic, and we'll have some fun. I posted this poll on my Twitter account at @AND_Porter. I posted of these three, who is your guy for the Sixers at number 10? Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, or Kevin Knox? 73% Mikal Bridges, and I agree. I made my case at the top of the show. I will podcast the show tomorrow, Pulse of Philly Podcast, another plug. But 94WIP.com, by the way, for all the podcasts, another plug. But Mikal Bridges is the guy. He's the guy I think the Sixers want. He's the guy I want them to take. I don't know if he'll be there at 10. I hope he is. He could go 9 to the Knicks. I think he'll be there. I think they'll take him. I think he's the guy. I'm speaking it into existence. Mikal Bridges with the 10th pick, Philadelphia 76ers. It's a perfect fit. He's a kid who's from Malvern. He's worked hard his entire life. Nothing's been handed to him. He hasn't been told how great he is. He doesn't expect to be a superstar in the NBA. He's 6'7". He's going to be 22 in August. He averaged 17-5 last year. He shot 43% from three, 80-some percent from the line, 90% from the line as a second-year player. He has 2 championships under his belt. He can shoot from anywhere. He can defend any position. Very versatile defender. Can play in transition, on and off the ball. He understands what his role is going to be, and he talked about this when they brought him in for a workout. Listen to how smart he sounds. He already knows exactly what he needs to do for this team when he gets drafted.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, coming from the Spurs, how they play, man. They like to play tough and defense. You know, defense first, and you know that's how I play. And also, I mean, you got Ben and Joel just. Them too, and I feel like as a person like me can correlate them just, you know, when Ben goes to ball screens or transition that I'm that guy, you know, you can find a corner or that's going to cut to the basket, you know, just move out the ball well for him and same with Embiid, just create space for him.
He just wants to play defense, move without the ball for Ben so Ben can find him for three and create space for Embiid. That's perfect. I mean, that's exactly what they need. They don't need someone to come in and take over. Like, I don't know what Kevin Knox and Miles Bridges and Lonnie Walker and Luka Doncic want to do. But I'm pretty sure those guys want to be alphas. Those guys want to score. Those guys want to dominate games. And the Sixers have that. They have, in my opinion, they have 2 top 10 players in the NBA, 2 superstar players, 2 perennial All-Stars, 2 guys that I think will start in the All-Star game next year. At least Embiid will. He did last year. Simmons will make the team. He should have last year. But, I mean, if you can get more versatile on defense, the Sixers were a top 5 defensive team in the NBA last year. If you can add a Mikal Bridges to that unit and just defend the heck out of teams, I mean, that's – and you're going to defend. You're going to shoot threes. You're going to play fast. It's the same model that the Warriors use, the Spurs. I mean, it's the new age modern NBA model, and that's what you have to do. And Mikal Bridges fits that better than anybody else in this class. And I'm not saying if they had the first pick, they should take him. I don't know what they would do, but they're in the perfect spot to get him. It really worked out beautifully. You have a kid from Malvern. You have a kid who's a 3-and-D kid from Malvern, from Villanova, who won 2 championships. He wants to play here. He understands his role. And you get the 10th pick, and he's projected to be the 10th pick. It's like it's literally perfect. It's all working out. And I know we like to overanalyze things, and that's why you hear these rumors, oh, they're going to move up for Luka Doncic, or, oh, Michael Porter Jr. might fall, or, oh, Lonnie Walker's a nice player, and, oh, Kevin Knox is better. I think we're just overthinking it sometimes. It's a pretty simple shut-the-door case to me. It's intriguing because they're at 10, so there are so many options, but it's a pretty shut-the-door case with me. The Kawhi Leonard thing is interesting. I touched on that a little bit. I didn't get into that too much tonight, but I will give my thoughts. The odds are Lakers are 5-7 to get Kawhi, Celtics 15-4, which is basically 4-1. Sixers 5-1, Spurs 5-1. So it's basically a 4-team race if you ask Vegas. Sixers are in that race. The Brett Brown thing probably helps. Monty Williams thing probably helps. They're connected to Kawhi. Kawhi would be a perfect fit. He's 24 years old. I mean, he'd be really, really ideal. I don't know if that affects their draft strategy either. But, you know, Kawhi would slide right into this lineup and you'd have a big three. I wouldn't trade Dario Saric for Michael Jordan in his prime. I've talked about this. I love Dario Saric. I would hate to see Dario Saric go. It would hurt me. It would hurt me as a human being to see Dario Saric no longer in a Sixers jersey. But, I mean, I get the franchise why they would do it. They would make a package. They would pretty much give anything to have Embiid, Simmons, and Kawhi. But Dario is just so fun to watch and so fun to root for. I've irrationally fell in love with Dario Saric as a basketball player. As a Sixers fan, I don't want to trade Dario for anything. It's not like I understand it, but I wouldn't be happy about it. I would be reluctant. Like, ugh, I don't want to see Dario go. I want to see him grow here. I want to see him become a 3-time All-Star as a Sixer. Like, imagine Dario on the NBA Finals stage, you know, raising the trophy. He'd be hilarious. He'd be great. He's Dario. He's one of us. 888-729-9494. Paul's coming in here soon. We're going to cross over. Jolly's coming up in a couple minutes. But, yeah, a lot is going on in the world of Sixer stuff because, you know, not only you have the Kawhi, you have the Paul George and LeBron stuff, the summer LeBron. It's kind of quiet right now, but it's about to explode. And I'm not sure that he has a better option than the Sixers. I mean, the Lakers have taken over the LeBron stuff of late because it makes some sense. LeBron has businesses in L.A., has a home in L.A. He has a lot of reasons to go to L.A. He's a Hollywood guy. He wants to learn under Magic, become a businessman, develop that side of his career. And they have a ton of cap space, so he can bring, if they get Kawhi, if they get Paul George, they can add that to LeBron and go toe-to-toe with Golden State. It makes some sense in that regard. The Sixers might be, long-term, I think the Sixers might be better for him because I don't know how long he's going to last, but they have better young talent than the Lakers. But, you know, if they can get Kawhi and Paul George and do like a triple team, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about that. It would make sense. So I really do think it's between the Lakers and the Sixers. It's going to be interesting. If you picked Philly, it'd be insane. All right, Jolly's coming up in a few minutes. What's up, Paul? What's going on? Happy Father's Day.
Did I hear? Thank you very much. Yeah. Not a dad, but
still happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you and everybody else as well. You didn't just say you wouldn't trade Dario Saric in his prime for Michael Jordan, did you?
I did say that. It's tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
but
I would trade.
I'm not kidding. I mean, I wouldn't do it. I know the franchise should and would. I like Dario Saric. I'm irrational.
More
I know
than Michael Jordan in his prime.
I'm irrational.
That's not irrational. That's insane.
I like rooting for Dario.
Nothing wrong with that. I Dario Saric too. It's gonna be interesting to see what they do on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm if not they, sure would get, I'm... they would get Michael Jordan. They'd win the championship. Who cares?
Well, he's 55 years old now.
That's true. Well, in his prime was the argument.
It's true. Yeah. I'm not sure I want Kawhi Leonard either right now.
Really?
That injury history and listen, he's a fabulous player. Talent-wise, I'd want him in a half a second, but given my options, I don't recall anybody else who's ever had a problem with the Spurs. And he's had this disconnect with the Spurs, and I'd be investigating this very, very carefully before I made any kind of move where I gave a lot of assets up to get him. Plus the fact that he's been hurt the last 3 years at times, and then this injury kept him out basically the whole year, whether it was the injury or angst with the Spurs. I certainly love Kawhi Leonard,
right,
but I'd be very careful. I'd do a lot of due diligence before I went and tried to get him.
Yeah, you'd have to vet it very carefully.
Yep.
So what do you got tonight? Everything?
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot of Sixers, a lot of this, that about the draft. And, you know, 10 and 26, it's not like having the first or second pick where there's a couple
right.
options. And if A doesn't do this and you do B, there's 18,000 different ways this could go.
Right.
There's 18,000 ways the Sixers could use these picks. I'm sure I'd be shocked if Thursday night at whenever the draft ends at midnight, they've taken all six of these picks in order as is.
Right.
Could they trade up? Could they do this? Could they do that? Could they get further picks down the road? I think it'll be fascinating as it all ties in with free agency. We'll talk about all that. Talk a little about the Phillies and finally winning a game series today on the road against a pretty good Milwaukee team. Just hanging on.
Wild game.
Very wild game. You didn't think that home run at the top of the ninth would mean much, but it turned out to be the difference.
I said, like Gabe Kapler's been getting a lot of criticism, and I get it, but like, you know, they're 37 and 32 through 69 games. They're winning somehow.
I'm not sure. The manager to me is less involved than the coach in the other three sports as to correlating actual wins and losses. To me, is he using his players correctly? Is he, you know, changing pitchers as he should and the like? And other than the fact he's excessively positive, but then again, he's in a game of negativity. He's trying to keep his players up throughout the year. I think he's doing a pretty good job right now.
Yeah, I'm okay with positive stuff publicly. It's different, you know, when you're in-house, you say what you want, you can get mad at players.
That's true. Also, I think Earl Weaver's the greatest manager I've ever seen. I don't think Earl Weaver would have the Phillies much better than that right now.
They have one hitter and one pitcher.
Yeah. And we'll see. Nola didn't pitch really well today, but again, they held on. It's a mark of a good team that can get B games or C games from their good players and still win.
You enjoying the World Cup?
I am really enjoying the World Cup.
It's been great.
I'm that soccer geek that you talked about. I watch 100 soccer games a year.
It's a good betting sport, too. People don't realize
it
that.
It is. There's all kinds of stuff you can bet with it. I don't bet soccer, uh-huh. but it's a great bet. I have a friend of mine in England who bets everything, corner kicks per game and this, that, the other. He bets the Premier League, like every game. Yeah. But I watch all international soccer. I can't really watch MLS.
Who do you got if I had to pin you down here?
Spain. Yeah, but their game Friday was amazing.
That was a great game.
Ronaldo got the hat trick. Messi missed the penalty kick.
I threw 25 on Portugal at 19.5-1 to win the World Cup.
I'm about to say, if they were 19.5 to win that game, I'd like to know.
No, to win the World Cup.
Legally?
Yeah, 25.
Where'd you go, Delaware?
Borgata.
Cool. How's your book?
That's it. That's all I did.
No, how is it? How's it look?
Oh, it's nice. It's nice.
Cool. Look forward to it.
Typical.
To...
And Borgata does things well.
Yeah, they sure do. They do things first class. And then we're going to talk about it's Father's Day today. We're going to try to get a list of all the fathers and sons. So many fathers and sons play professional sports. We're going to find out who the best are and list them all and find out who has a son that plays the same sport he does, who plays a different sport, what sports are more conducive to dads and sons and which aren't. And have a lot of fun with Father's Day and that, and great show, dude.
Love it. Paul Jolovitz coming up in a few minutes. He'll have a fun show for you. Happy Father's Day to everyone out there. Thanks for listening. Andrew Porter, it's 9:57.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.